and welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Philip Terman. Philip Terman is the author of 5 books of poetry and 4 limited edition chapbooks. His new book, Our Portion, New and Selected Poems, was just released from Autumn House Press. His poems have appeared in several journals and anthologies, including Poetry Magazine, The Kenyon Review, The Georgia Review, The Forward, Tycoon, The Sun Magazine, 99 Poets for the 99%, and the Bloomsbury Anthology of Contemporary Jewish American Poetry. He has received the Anna Davison Rosenberg Award for Poetry on the Jewish Experience, the Kenneth Patchen Award, and the Sow's Ear Prize. He's a professor of English at Clarion University, where he directs the Spoken Art Reading Series. Terman also co-directs the Chautauqua Writers Festival and is the coordinator of the Bridge Literary Center in Franklin, PA. Terman has had a book entitled My Dear Friend Kafka translated by Sela Ruzik, an Aleppo writer and translator. He collaborates with the painter James Stewart and the bookbinder Susan Frakes to create handmade art books entitled The Four Seasons and Like a Bird Entering the Window and Leaving Through Another Window. Terman has collaborated with musicians and visual artists and on occasion performs his poetry with the jazz band the Barkeyville Triangle. Terman lives with his family in a one-room schoolhouse outside of Grove City, Pennsylvania. That's a long bio.
Wow, yeah, boy.
Hi, Phil, how are you?
Hey, Jan, good to see you.
I'm really, really happy that you're here. This book, New and Selected, it looks terrific, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're doing a lot of collaboration, and we can maybe talk about that, but first, do you have some poems?
Sure. I'm going to read the first poem because it's about writers and being around writers, and there's so many wonderful writers here in Pittsburgh that just love it here. It's called Among the Scribes. Didn't they tell you, all those sages, that the promised land is this moment? Here, now, the late summer air, this dew-drenched field, this thin filament of gossamer between an apple tree and an apple tree, the almost unnoticeable blue jay feather in the unmown grass. Remember when you were Moses? Remember when you couldn't speak and they spit on you and you garbled and slurred your words? Always you were singular as the swallowtail losing itself in the goldenrod profusion. Remember when you were Whitman, twirling a leaf of grass, like this morning, coffee beside your wife, in the shadow of the shade tree and the sassafras, drops of tree rain dripping patterns on your page, hydrangeas streaked with the pink of their next incarnation, the children picking pears, filling their baskets with silliness. History and the future leave you suspended like a hummingbird's paws. A leaf falls. Who ordered these distractions? The rain tells you one thing, the silence another, but that traitor, summer, that shameful lover, gathers back to itself its sweetness, its light, reclaiming its juices. So you want to sing poems deep as those psalms chanted with exact pronunciation to the text, the precise cantillations, the pauses and stresses, and beautiful, the way that swallowtail now dips and dives its yellow into the yellow of the sunflowers. Are you adding to the law? Are you composing your holy writ? Don't we all want to translate each moment into the eternal? Isn't this your flowering time? Aren't you robed in royalty? And shouldn't every word be a fiery contribution? And aren't even you among the scribes? Another poem. That's a poem from the new poems of the selection of the selected poems, and I'm gonna do another poem. It's a little bit different. I do a lot of family poems and related, inspired by family, and of course the father poems. This is one of those father poems, and it has a quote before it by the theologian philosopher Martin Buber that says. The greatest evil is when you forget that you are the son of a king. This is called Our Royalty. Yet, aren't I the son of Joe Terman, the used car salesman? And wasn't he the son of Abraham Terman, carpenter, until injured by a salami truck? Or was it a cable car on Cedar Hill in Cleveland Heights, Ohio? And wasn't he the son of whom? And how far back do we search for our royalty? Because my father was not robed, but robbed and shot in the lower intestine and pistol whipped. And if he were a king, would he have lain on the couch all day after they raised the rent and wept? And if he were a king, would he have taken that suited stranger's advice and got himself some advertising? Get yourself some advertising, he told my father. Ain't no one gonna know you're here. I'll think about it, my father replied, and showed him the door. Joe Terman, if you weren't a king, perhaps you were one of the 33 wise peasants, concealing beneath your sweater and plaid pants your esoterica. Perhaps, between customers, you were studying the Kabbalah and Zohar in secret. Did you, in the bathroom where the body man stored his playboys, don your tefillin and yarmulke and sway to the Psalms? In your filing cabinets, where the titles of cars were kept, just there, did you house your Talmud? Now that your life has completed itself, Joe Terman, measured its time and distance, sung its chapter and verse, and we can look up every moment of those 67 years, will we uncover your scepter and crown, examining in the minutest detail your errors and triumphs, will the ornaments of your authority be revealed? Okay, yeah, just to read some variety in the book, do another poem that's somewhat different from those two. See, this is a short 14-line piece, thinking of summer. It's called The Summer You Read Proust. Of course, Proust wrote a 3,000-book novel, and this is a very short poem. Remember the summer you read Proust? In the hammock, tied to the apple trees, your daughters climbed, their shadows merging with the shadows of the leaves spilling onto those long, arduous sentences. All afternoon and into the evening, robins, jays, the distant dog, the occasional swaying, the way the hours rocked back and forth, that gigantic book holding you in its woven nest. You couldn't get enough pages. You wished that with every turning, 1,000 were added, the words falling you into sleep, the sleep waking you into words, the summer you read Proust, which lasted the rest of your life.
You just tuned in. You're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Philip Terman. He's reading from his new book entitled Our Portion, New and Selected Poems. It's published by Autumn House Press. Phil, you know, you've been on the show before, and we're really glad to have you back. But, you know, one thing that always comes up when you read is, you know, the full-bodied voice in your poems and all the details, and it's just a really great feeling as a listener to sort of have all these details wash over you. You know, it's a comforting feeling. I don't know if you know that. Do you know that?
Well, I hope that.
Yeah.
You know, details are just so wonderful. You know, it's just for me that's the essence of a poem. And when you get to the details, you also hopefully music comes with them and rhythm and just keep adding and adding to them. And you sort of get into a rhythm that carries you away. And I think that's the mysterious, wonderful, thrilling part of poetry is the experience of writing them or discovering them and, you know, writing them down. And maybe the reader could share that. And that's what I love when I read poetry.
Well, I mean, a lot of people use details in their poems.
Right.
But they don't feel like your poems at all. Hmm. I mean, I know it's more complicated, but I don't know. There's something that you do that's really great that is, maybe it's you keep extending and extending is one thing. Because, you know, sometimes I think the poem is over and I'm like, no, there's more. And in a good way.
Okay.
In a good way. And it keeps developing in unexpected ways. And I wonder if that happens when you're writing, if your poems are very long and then you cut back, or you or you work to extend?
Normally, I work to extend, though I don't extend just for the sake of extending. I think that, you know, it's sort of, it's almost like, you know, an experience that it'll tell you what to do. And I know it sounds mystical and weird, but it does, you know, it tells you what to do. You need more. There's more there. It's a feeling. You know, you want to reflect that. You want to fill in that feeling, I guess. You know, and some feelings last a long time, especially if you're in a beautiful, well, depending what, it doesn't matter what setting you're in. I mean, it's just sort of accumulation, abundance. I've always been interested in abundance. I love Whitman, obviously. And so that, I think, accumulation and abundance.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Though I don't want to overdo it, of course. So that's when I, you know, go back and I might, you know, shape it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I want it to be inclusive as well, rather than exclusive. Some poets are exclusive, I think, in good ways, like Dickinson, you know, is very short and terse and, I mean, perfect. Whitman, obviously, is inclusive. So I'm more a cataloger.
Yeah, yeah.
And a list maker, you know, and I'm in that tradition, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to ask you about the collaboration you were mentioning about that you have with this book, My Dear Friend Kafka, with your friend in Aleppo. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah. I love to talk about it because it's so unusual and so wild and weird. He saw a poem of mine about Kafka on the internet and emailed me and asked if he can translate it into Arabic.
And his name is?
Selah Rusik.
Okay.
Rusik. I'm not myself quite sure because I've never actually talked to him, but we've emailed a great amount of times in the last, since then, which was about 4 years ago. And we established an email friendship, and he told me a little bit of his life at a time, and miserable, as pretty much everybody in Aleppo would be. He lost his son, disappeared, his wife. He's not sure where she is. He's alone, but he just embodies that he loves literature, and he's recommending books to me. He's the most well-read person I know, even though he doesn't have access to books in Aleppo very much. But he's, over the course of his life, he's read and he reads on the internet, and he translates. And so then he wanted to translate more. He did. Eventually, we thought about maybe a book, and he actually had it published in some newspapers and journals in Damascus and in Iraq.
Hmm.
Which is crazy to see my picture in front of a poem that's in Arabic,
and so we did this book
and he got it published. I wanted to bring it, but I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful book. It's just gorgeous, but we've been communicating since then, and now I've sort of sprung the idea of maybe he should translate some contemporary Assyrian poets into English.
Yeah, that would be great.
And he has. And he got a couple accepted at Poetry London.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of work on them together a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we're thinking about maybe doing a chapbook of one particular poet that he's enamored with.
Well, that's great.
Who's living in Syria now.
Well, so your book, My Dear Friend Kafka, is not available in English.
No.
It's only Arab?
No,
Arabic?
No. I mean, there are scattered poems from various books of mine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but there's no English versions in that book, and it's just in Arabic. It's available in Arabic, I guess, from the publisher. Not sure how, I'm sure there's a way to get it, but yeah, it's in Arabic.
Okay, that's really a great story.
Yeah.
So,
crazy story.
Could you read some more?
Yeah, I think I'll read a poem from this is a selected poems. So maybe I'll read a few poems from the earlier books. Okay, this is called Alternative Ten Commandments. Thou shalt walk with your love on summer evenings before supper to the pond with the many peepers. Thou shalt sit in silence and listen to deep-throated trills chorusing their frog spirits from homes of leaves and sticks and water. Thou shalt observe the gradual emergence of the Big Dipper, star by star. Thou shalt not long for anywhere else. Thou shalt clear the mind of affairs of business and duties. Thou shalt look from the ground to your lover's face and press your lips there and open your face to your lover's lips and tongue. Thou shalt not be afraid of flashing lights of deer spotters and broken pickups. Thou shalt slowly rise and, bopping to the frog's song, shimmy to the pond until the wheat field swallows your shadow. Thou shalt fulfill the frog's longing and make your bodies bare and slide into the water and glisten. Thou shalt remain until your heartbeats slow down and the moon appears above the surface. Okay, another poem from the earlier books. This is a mother, kind of a grandmother poem. The famous Russian Jewish woman poet Terminovsky. If you found out that your great-grandmother was a poet, if there was one obscure book you discovered, one off day at the bottom of a dusty cardboard box, in the corner basement room, covered by pickle jars, slid behind your father's war uniforms, a volume slim as a small hand, the cover a faded blue, layered and sealed with mold, the pages tearing with a touch, the letters in Yiddish, and there's her name, Terminovsky, your name, before shortened by the authorities, the way they would slice off anything unpronounceable. Terminovsky, the famous Russian Jewish woman poet, her photograph on the title's facing page, her face, the one you recognize from worn photos, but younger, a beauty, no babushka, a frilled scarf wrapped around the neck, her dark, thick hair flowing from beneath a tilted to one side beret, a few strands loose across her cheeks, dangling from her lips a cigarette. She examines the strange letters, lines, stanzas, wonders about the pressure of her fingers pressing the pen to the page. Between the poverty and the pogrom, the praying for a relative to sponsor her over, the baking of the bread she had to peddle in the marketplace, having to worry about who would print and publish poems by a woman named Terminovsky, about being a girl in the shtetl, the smell of herring and challah rising, horses and wagons in the open air, the mud streets, the learned huddled toward the eastern wall, old men in black coats, how it shamed her to have to sit on her side of the synagogue. Even if she had the space, even if she had the time to save her moments in words, the way she kept buttons in a box and was assured of the support to write them all down. This is a longish poem about my brother in sections that I'll just read one section of. The long poem is to a scientist dying young, and it's about seven sections, but I'll just read one of them. And it's called What We Own. I followed you down the switchback trail of the Grand Canyon, and we slept in a crevice, and we own that. And we own those moments tossing the football in front of 4073 Wincode Road until the streetlight snapped on. And we own the smoke bomb the cops threw at us and a few thousand others at the Jefferson Airplane concert, Akron, Ohio, 1972. And we own the whole country we passed through all the way to the ocean, where we checked into a hotel and he discovered, lying atop a Gideon's Bible, a black film canister's worth of weed and a half a pack of rolling papers. And we smoked it, and it was good. Unbelieving of our luck, which we own, and the lunar landscape surrounding our tent in Big Bend, Texas, and the stars so close we could read by them, and we did. And we own The Godfather, Part One, on the screen of that packed theater in Evanston, Illinois, and we own that fear when we were lost in the Tennessee woods, into the dark, and you followed some analytical instinct, and we found, lo and behold, a road, and Bob Dylan, who was ours, and Joan Baez, who was also ours, singing The Times They Are a-Changin' in the War Memorial, and watching the Indians, miracle of miracles, beat the New York Yankees at Yankee Stadium during the 1990 heat wave. That, too, that victory was ours. And I remember how quiet you sometimes were, and I asked you about it, and you said it's a feeling you get. You don't know how to talk about it. And I'd like to think we own that feeling and how we bested the myths. We didn't become murderer and victim. We didn't cheat on the other's birthright. Oh, my brother of the other world, my brother who perhaps will greet me when I arrive at that place prepared for by our Father, who is now joined by his own flesh and blood, which is not flesh, but bones, and perhaps spirit, which we believe in, like the moon or the unpredictable Cleveland weather, or the way the snow descends on the fallen leaves, or how the sun glazes them now for their moment, stirred in the slight wind, that same wind that blew the Jerusalem dust in our faces, which we own.
You've just tuned in. You're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Philip Terman. reading from his new book, Our Portion, New and Selected Poems. Yeah, I like that brother poem a lot. I remember that one very well.
Oh, thank you.
Nice poem.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you briefly about the process of putting together this new and selected. I mean, it's over 230 pages. It's a lot of work.
Way too long, yeah.
No, it's not. No, but that's a lot to consider and
yes.
and put together many years of work. What was it like for you doing that?
Oh, it was fun, and of course, it was the hardest part was to not to use because I still like them all, and I'm sure I'm very prejudiced. the hardest part was cutting, and maybe I should have done it more, but this poem needs to be in there, and that poem needs to be in there, and I didn't think about an overall, like in a normal book, I would think about arrangement and then the overall, as for Robert Frost saying that the book is a book is 24 poems, the book itself is a 25th poem, something like that. I did that for the new poems. The new mm-hmm. poems was kind of selected and arranged like a real book would be. But the other ones were, I wanted to touch on themes that are comprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be comprehensive about the themes that subjects that I write about rather than have too many poems about one thing.
Right, right. And obviously the listeners can't see, but you've got a really beautiful painting on the cover.
Yes, and a local Pittsburgh artist, James Simon.
Oh, is that James Simon?
Yes. It's a selection, it's a piece from a larger mural.
It's really nice.
Mosaic, I should say.
Really colorful.
Yeah, I was really happy that he gave permission to use it. That was really generous of
him.
Beautiful cover. I think it really fits the combination of the sort of the old world Jewish thing and but the sensual environmental nature, lushness of nature that I the garden that I like to write about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have a garden.
Yes,
at your schoolhouse
mm-hmm.
home, outside of Clarion.
Well, outside of Grove City, PA,
outside
about 40
City.
Minutes from Clarion.
Okay, and what do you grow there?
Everything, you name it: tomatoes, squash.
All vegetables.
Vegetables, there's flowers.
And flowers.
There's shade gardens. I'm going to tip my hat to my wife, mm-hmm. Chris, because it's really her. I'm like her slave. So, somebody asked what I do to help her with the garden. I said I immortalize it by writing poetry. But we had kind of a laugh about that. But yeah, it's wonderful. Wonderful just to be around all that growth and beauty.
Yeah.
Just to be surrounded by beauty is just a cool thing.
That's right. Okay, could you read some more?
Yeah, I will. In fact, maybe I'll read a garden poem. I'll just read a few selections from the title poem, Our Portion, which I won't read at all, but it's in several sections. So there's a few sections. It's called Our Portion, and it's all about spring. Though we didn't know it at the time, the purpose of the walk was the bluebird. Hiking for the first signs of spring, the swampy skunk cabbage, Mayflowers, green umbrellas, imagining Trillium's three petals, white or pink, imagining Jack in the Pulpits and Georgia O'Keeffe. These few hours of early spring, imagining the dogwood's white brevities, and, in a patch of weeds, in the center of everything, a blossom, blue, and I called your name, it waited, you looked up, then it flew off. Another section. God kissed me and gave me breath. You kissed me and took it away. All we ask for is time, more of it. We're greedy for it. We skipped work and crossed Sandy Creek. We took advantage of the one day of sunlight. Where, what is this thing, this being alive and well? Why has this happiness arrived and stayed? What are these gifts of ours tumbling as if out of some exhausted cloud? These hours we fritter away, waiting for the school bus, our days revolving the way the world spins to a child who's just spun senselessly because she is a child. It's already a song, says the robin and the hydrangea, or a sweet odor, says the Madonna lily to the crowd of bee balm, or a softening of the air, says the yellow swallowtail, or a dusking of the light, says the unfathomable sky. Where will the butterfly lean our attention as it skitters lightly across the tip-tops of the cornstalks? And how are journeys determined destination by destination? And how is it possible to forget about the dead, negligent creatures that we are, the way a loved one disappears into a distance we are incapable of distinguishing. So the most proper study is outdoors, the hummingbird dipping its needle beak into the open mouth of the morning glory, the retriever dashing off in a flash and rolling in the scent of a dead skunk. If I can follow through like that, the way she burrows into a deer's abandoned ribcage, whittling the bones down all afternoon and into the evening. She knows the wisdom of the masters, but I flounder, following the forms of dailiness, coffee and paper, breakfast and school bus, the long arc of work, supper, a situation comedy, and, after the children sleep, thick novels, longing. Did you study the wisdoms? Was your business honorable? That's what will be required of you. Did you sing your portion of sunlight, of looking through windows, mornings into afternoons, the whole day yours, spreading itself into evening, and suddenly the music of crickets, a hummingbird's worth of air, the portion you were allowed, the dust mote of your existence? I'll read another piece. This is called Walking to Jerusalem. Pedometer attached to her belt, your mother, spry and strong at 80, joins the other Methodist church members in calculating the 5,915 miles, no matter the weather, to add up all the way from Linesville, Pennsylvania, to Jerusalem. They need not worry about miracles or pausing at the sign of the cross. They need not stop for security to check their purses for weapons. They need no visa nor baggage, no money to exchange for shekels, no guidebook, no guide. They need no ancient tongue or prophecies. They are simply, day by day, walking, mile after mile, the sink to the table, uptown to the post office, down the block to visit the sick neighbor, Sundays to and from church. And when they walk far enough, adding up their pedometers together, they will arrive in Jerusalem and keep walking.
We have time for one more short one, if you have it.
Sure. Another kind of spring poem. It's called Some Days. Some days you have to turn off the news and listen to the bird or truck or the neighbor screaming out her life. You have to close all the books and open all the windows so that whatever swirls inside can leave and whatever flutters against the glass can enter. Some days you have to unplug the phone and step out to the porch and rock all afternoon and allow the sun to tell you what to do. The whole day has to lie ahead of you, like railroad tracks that drift off into gravel. Some days you have to walk down the wooden staircase through the evening fog to the river, where the peach roses are closing, sit on the grassy bank, and wait for the two geese.
The poetry of Philip Terman. Thank you, that was great.
Thank you so much, Ian.
You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment Newsweekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 WESA.